es un cuestión de fe. And the question is, simple sense, which seems to be a simple thing, is something which is difficult to understand philosophically. No philosopher would ever have given the formula that the Torah gives for Simchas Yontif. For instance, the Gemara says in Beitza, Amar Rabbi Elazar, the Yontif, a person is either Ochel Veshosa or is Yoshe Veshona, the Gemara says. So the Gemara says, so according to Rabbi Elazar, a person on Yontif could either spend the day eating and drinking or sitting and learning. Seems like the two are quite diverse activities. I mean, and yet, according to Yadis, that's Kiyum Yontif. So it's Machlekes. Machlekes is whether a person has to spend the whole day eating and drinking, or he has to decide in the morning what he's going to do. Either he's going to eat and drink today, or else he's going to sit and learn today. Or we paskin that it's Choku. We divide it in half. Half of the day is learning, in the first half, tefillah, learning, and the second half is chilu shir. But even according to us, the second half of the day is eating and drinking. Where does eating and drinking fit into the scheme of perfection? That's the question. And it's not something that any person would conclude from a philosophically. I don't think anybody would ever come up with such a formula. And this is perfection. Something we have to understand. What is the mitzvah of achila ushiya on yantav? Simchas yantav. Simchas yantav. Okay. Simchas yantav, of course, is not just relegated to yantav itself. I mean, there is the main expression is on Yontif. But the concept of Simcha exists even when it's not Yontif. Yivdu Asad Hashem b'Simcha, and the Rambam says in Hilchus Yontif, in Perek Vav, the Rambam says a person... Can you get a Rambam? The Rambam says that Kishu Adam Ochel v'Shosev v'Sameach v'Regel lo yimoshech b'yayin u'b'schok v'Kalas Rosh. The Yomar Shakomish Yosef Bazer Yava Mit Benissa Simcha. So the person shouldn't on Yontif drink a lot of wine and be involved in frivolity and think that that the more he's involved in a being in a frivolous state that he's mekayim the mitzvah. He says that's wrong. Shashikrus Vaschokarbe Vakalasarosh Ina Simcha Elaholus Vesichlus. He says that a person getting drunk on Yontif is asur. That's why the custom of many yeshivas is wrong on Simchas Torah. I remember as a youngster, the first recollections of Simchas Torah was in the yeshiva, how people got wildly drunk, type of things when you're very young, you know, the memory traces are very strong. And I remember the wildness. I mean, like, it's frightening for a child many times, you know. Especially when somebody tells me your father's drunk. So, in the yeshivas, wasn't true, but, you know, they tried, the person that said it was drunk, they tried to share. But the, this type of a thing, which is common in yeshivas, is really wrong. You see from the wrong. You're not allowed to get drunk. Drunk is only Purim. And we'll discuss it before Purim. But drunk is only Purim. On Yontif, there's no drunk. Yontif, you're not allowed to get drunk. Simchas Torah is not a time to get drunk. There's a loch of shesia, that a person, I mean, that's something that in this society is lost. You know, the concept of moderation is totally lost in this society. It's a society of either or. And in Yadis, moderation is the key. The dafka moderation. not abstention. So the drinking on Yontif, the drinking of yayin, is an act of moderation. In this society, moderation doesn't find itself very popular. Outside, it's either or. Abstain completely, or else indulged like a crazy person. But there's no middle of the road. Yadis, the middle of the road, is the road. That's precisely where one is supposed to be, in terms of shisiya. So not shikrus, and not a person that doesn't drink. It's also wrong. You're supposed to be ochel v'shosa, but the key is the amount. That's the key. That is to be a certain amount where it relaxes in a certain amount, but not over that point. So that's what the Rambam says. A person gets drunk, he says he's not mekayem mitzvah simchas yontif. He says, because we're only nitztav ala simcha sheyesh bo avodas yotzer hakol. A simcha which has in it the worship of the creator of everything. Shenema, tachas shalavanta shem lekacha b'simcha v'tuv levov nerov kol. So in the klolas, in the tocha, it says, because you didn't serve God, the simcha v'tuv levov. So apparently, there's a criticism against Klal Yisrael, that not the criticism that they didn't keep the Torah. Something else. But the criticism is Tachas Hashelo Avadatas or Hashem Lakecha Besimcho V'tuv Levav Merov Kol Avadatas Evecha. So it's an interesting thing. So you see the Torah and the Tochacha. I mean, you think the Torah would say only because you didn't keep the mitzvahs. No. Forget about that. Even if you kept the mitzvahs, it's not the keeping of the mitzvahs, but there's something more. There's a taina to Klal Yisrael that they didn't keep the mitzvahs in a certain state. The sucho v'tuv levov, merov kol. They weren't happy about the mitzvah. There wasn't any happiness there. So the Torah, which demands of a person shmiras on mitzvahs, it seems also demands simcha. Simcha is not optional. People think of simcha as something which is optional. But simcha in the Torah is not optional, but it's mandatory. An interesting thing. Now, why should it be so mandatory, simcha? The person is not. He's depressed a little bit. So he's, he does the mitzvahs. The thing on the contrary. Keeps all the mitzvahs. Nope, there's a complaint against him. A criticism against him. Why? What is a serious criticism? Because it says in Tocha, I mean, that's a serious place. It was talking about the breaking of the bris. So the Ram quotes from over there. So the Ram quotes from the Torah. Okay. So the question is why is this so? That's number one. And two, what kind of a thing is it that Ochel v'Shoson, there was one Tana that held that not just one Tana, there's a group of Tanaim, really more than one, that held that that a person in Yontif could be Ochel v'Shoson the whole day. What kind of a day is it? Ochel v'Shoson. That sounds strange. It doesn't sound like a religious activity. Okay, that's a good point. The point you're mentioning is that Donnie's saying that the person, if he becomes totally inebriated, becomes drunk, so then at some point there was Mekayim the Mitzvah. Until he reached that point, he... I don't think so. I don't think the Rambam would agree. I think the Rambam would say that he wasn't yet to the Mitzvah at all. Because it means that his objective was shikras. His objective was shikras. On the way is not, there's no, it's not a kim of on the way. It's not a certain set. In other words, if his objective is shikras, that's it. He's involved in sikhlas and harulas. And there's something that cancels out the whole mitzvah. Just like the Rambam says that the person who doesn't bring into his house. That a person is mechayev to bring in the unfortunate people into his house, people who aren't happy. The person that closes his doors and just eats himself, his wife, his family, he says, and he doesn't feed the poor people, the ones that are bitter, unfortunate. Ain't this simchas mitzvah or simchas kreisa? This is not simchas mitzvah altogether. Simchas kreisa is his own enjoyment. It's a very delicate point here. I mean, the happiness that we're describing is very delicate. What would make a person happier than having a good time with his family? I mean, that's it. A good time with family, eats, drinks. Doesn't want strangers. Doesn't bother with strangers. So So this you think is what makes him happy? No, 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 no. If he does that, there's no mitzvah at all. Nothing. Can't slept in time mitzvah, the Rambam says. Okay. Kilachmam lenafsham. Zivcheihem kilachem onim. Lahem. Kol ochlov yitomu. Kilachmam lenafsham. Yisimcha kizu kolonhi. Shenemar vizireisi perish al panechem. Perish chagechem. Means it's a, something which is a, an abomination. Abominable. So on the contrary, it's a terrible thing. So one little twist and the whole mitzvah is not only canceled, but not only canceled, but it's completely another thing altogether, and it's an avera. It's an avera. Something which is an abomination before God. So we see this idea as a delicate idea, this idea, so the way it's one way or the other. Not so simple. Just be happy. So the question is, we have to understand what is simcha. That's the most basic, question. What is simcha? How do we approach what simcha is? So you have to really start with an understanding of what happiness is. What is meant? Because happiness is the basic. Simcha is, it may be a certain type of happiness, but it's based on the concept of happiness. So you have to understand what the generic happiness is. What does happiness mean when a person says that he's happy? And it's but what is it? But yeah, but you have to be more specific. You're saying being alone with God would be happy, but what exactly does a person mean when he says he's happy? When a person searches for happiness, everybody wants to be happy. The world is searching for happiness. But what are they searching for? I mean, what is it? What does it mean? What's the definition of happiness? No conflict is the absence. Is an absence, but that's not what happiness is. What exactly do we mean when we say, or what is a person looking for? What does it mean when he's happy? Yes? Satisfaction of nature. Would you say then satisfaction of nature, if he satisfies his nature, he's happy? Yeah. Would you say then that a chimpanzee is happy? He is. He's happy. In other words, when a person is looking for happiness, he wants to be in that state that he sees the chimpanzee in the zoo in. I don't think so. I don't think it's a state. You wouldn't, I don't think, as a matter of fact, the term happiness could be applied to the animal world. That's my opinion. I don't think saying animal is happy. I contented? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe that's a better term. But he's not, but not happy. When a person looking for happiness, looking for something else. Yes? Say. Well, let's just get down to a little more. Okay? We say that happiness and pleasure are not synonymous. All right? Pleasure and happiness are not the same thing. Right? A person could be in pain. The proof is because a person could be in pain and he could be happy. A person could be told that he's just had a serious operation and he's in terrible pain, but he found out he's going to live. he's very happy. Very happy. Happier than people that have no pain. Okay? So happiness and pleasure are not synonymous. Of course, you could be happy and have the opposite of pleasure. But nevertheless, we feel, and I think rightfully so, that happiness has something to do with pleasure. Has something to do with pleasure. Okay. Now the question is, it is not pleasure, but it has something to do with pleasure. What is it? Okay. My point about the animal world is, why can't the animal be happy? Because to me it seems, and you'll decide later whether I'm right or wrong, but to me it seems that without consciousness, there's no, when we talk about happiness, that's why I wouldn't want to be happy like a gorilla. I wouldn't want to be happy like a dog. I mean, because the dog, the animal, is not really conscious. It's not really conscious of anything. And when a person wants to be happy, he is looking for a certain consciousness. So what is happiness? See, happiness is when a person attains pleasure. I told you it's associated with pleasure, happiness. Happiness is when a person attains pleasure when he reflects upon his state of being. That's what it means. That is when a person is happy. person is happy when he attains pleasure. It has something to do with pleasure. It has to do with pleasure because it is pleasure in relationship to a certain frame of mind that's only human, and that is a consciousness and awareness of the self. When a person reflects about himself and he attains a pleasurable experience, that means that he's happy about his state. That's what it means. That's what happiness is. Okay? All right, now it shouldn't be so illusory anymore. And I said once before, I mentioned the reason why people cannot attain happiness, and this everybody with intelligence will admit, no matter how successful people are, they realize that a happiness is elusive. It's something else. It's different than poppers. Why is that so? That is so because the person thinks that they were happy. They think they know what it is. That's why they can't attain it. Because they're always trying to attain a certain experience where at a certain moment they experience that happiness and they felt that they're very happy with themselves. But what they're trying to do is go back to that state, you see, to somehow be able to grab a hold of that moment and extend it. And they don't realize that the happiness that they attained at that time, by definition, cannot be lasting. Can't last. It's a matter of psychology to understand why that's so. But I think we spoke about it a number of times, why that's so. And that is why the world can never attain happiness, because they're always trying to attain that state where, see, they think they know what it is because they feel they've experienced it. Otherwise, you wouldn't search for it if you didn't experience it. They don't realize that the experience, by definition, had to be momentary. Because the reason why they're happy about themselves, just briefly, is not because there was a real... It didn't stem from any real state of the soul, but it stemmed from a change of state. A person, for instance, has a certain amount of honor and dignity. If you'll take the person and incarcerate him, put him in jail, mistreat him, so then he'll be very unhappy. But you take him out of jail, that moment he'll be very happy. Because he'll be happy about his state that moment. But the reason why he's happy is because the change. See? So most people know what or have an idea of happiness because they've sensed it at some point. But the reason why they've sensed it is because of the change. But change, by definition, is a momentary phenomenon. You can't always be undergoing changes. So a person who is receiving a certain amount of honor, you know, and a person make a big dinner in a person's honor, and he thinks that the people are sincere, he'll be very happy about himself. But that can't last very long because it's a change. And then now what happens now? And then it's, by definition, it's not lasting. By definition. There's a deep psychology to how it works. But that's the basic understanding of it. So that's why happiness, because people think they know what it is and they're trying to look for it. By definition, they can't attain it. But at any rate, that has nothing to do with the definition of what it is. It doesn't destroy the definition. Definition, nevertheless, is being happy about the person's state. Being happy. I mean, attaining pleasure when one reflects about his state. That's the definition of happiness. Okay. Now the question is like this. Let's say we were to pose this question to philosophers. We'd ask Socrates and Plato and Aristotle, the greatest philosophers. We'd say, tell me, should a person be happy or should he not be happy? Now, I don't mean that. And I see there's another thing. In philosophy and in psychology as well, you have to be careful with words, because words are misused. In general language, that's why scientists establish their own language, because in common parlance, people use words indiscriminately. Like, they say, are you happy? It doesn't necessarily mean this definition that we're giving. They have a general idea, like, you're not in pain, you're at peace. I mean, so you have to be careful with the word. But let's use the word strictly according to our definition. So when we say that a person is happy, so if we ask the philosophers, we had a group of philosophers, and we'll make a bezin, and we'll ask them a question. Well, Esther, what would you say? Should a person be happy? Is there any benefit for persons that have been a person being happy or not? What would the answer? What would you say? In other words, I'd ask the philosopher, I'd say, tell me, if I have now an hour, what is there any benefit? Let's say I'll be involved in some abstract mathematical point, or studying something about the universe, or some point in metaphysics. Or should I spend that hour reflecting upon my state? What would he say? He'd say, better off gaining more knowledge. Is there anything wrong with being happy, if you'd ask the philosopher? What would he say? No. He'd say that it is part of human nature to be concerned about one's state. It's not something which is necessarily the highest aspect of man, but it is a part of him. It is a part of his nature. And insofar as he's human, he wants to feel, occasionally at least, he has to reflect upon himself, and he wants to feel that he's living properly. It's a part of human nature. So being happy is a good thing. If it's based on reality, it's a good thing. If it's not based on reality, it can be a dangerous thing, because it means he's going to keep on going in the wrong direction. But assuming he's really and truly living properly. So it has to be a person that can be truly living properly, otherwise there's nothing to talk about. So if that person really is living properly, so he should be happy. So is that a good thing? Let's say insofar as it's necessary psychologically, it depends on the person. I mean, a person that's involved in thought would be considered even on a higher level. Why should he be thinking about himself? Of course, he's a human being. Occasionally, he has to do it, but there's no purpose in being happy. There's no purpose in that. The higher level is the activity. A person should be more involved in the activity of pursuit of knowledge. That's what a philosopher is after all. Philosopher means a lover of knowledge. So a lover of knowledge shouldn't really involve himself too much in thinking about his own state. Insofar as necessary, fine. but there's no kium. There's no kium in doing such a thing. It's nice, it's optional, it's good. I mean, it's a good insofar as man's psyche is constructed in a certain way. Okay? So, happiness, then, wouldn't really be anything that's something to strive for. I mean, that's something to strive for. But it's an optional thing, it's a good, it's a benefit. I would say, a philosopher would say, it is a benefit of living properly. Benefit of the philosophical life. But he'd never make a mitzvah out of it. That's for sure. Okay? But in walks Yadus. Yes. Something that's necessary after the other mitzvah from the Eitz Hadas Tov Ra. Before that, it wouldn't be necessary. Okay. So in Yadus, so Yadus would seem to go against what the philosophers would say. And Yadus, what? I mean, what Levi says is right. A person could be involved in doing tshuva, which is a painful process, and be happy about it. That's because he's happy that he's able to be involved. But the happiness means he's reflecting upon a state that he's able to do it. So it's always, happiness always means reflecting upon the state. That's what it is. Okay? So actually, if a person asks you if you're happy, you say, well, give me a minute. I'll, not yet. So Yadus, however, steps in and gives us a formula which is different than any philosophical formula. The formula says it's a mitzvah, yantif, kedushas hayom. I mean, kedushas hayom, and the kedushas hayom is definitely happiness makes up the kedushas hayom. Question is, according to some time, makes up the whole condition. Could make up the whole condition. Say, oh, an interesting thing. Either ochel v'shosa, not to get drunk, but he's ochel v'shosa. He's ochel v'shosa kol hayom kulo, breaks it up kol hayom kulo, or he's yoshev v'shona. An interesting thing. Yoshev v'shona. Yoshev v'shona means he sits and he learns. An interesting thing. Yeah, he's yoshev v'shona. An interesting thing. Oh, so how does Yadus? And we say chaku. But how does Yadus say that a person should spend the half of the day in Achimish Siyah and Simcha? Why? What kind of an idea is this? What's the answer? The pasuk was pasuk. Vachalta Hashem lefnei Hashem alokecha v'samachta ato v'esecha. Amazing thing. v'chalt Hashem. That's the whole thing. Go be ochal v'shosa aliyah l'regel, l'fnei Hashem aliyah l'regel, and the samachta talvesach. So what's the difference? What is it that Yadis can give that no philosopher could ever supply? I don't think the philosophers would be against what Yadis says if they had the knowledge that Yadis has, but there's certain knowledge that's attainable only through Nevuah. And we are fortunate that we were able to attain that knowledge. That's the Bracha Nekshah, Bracha Bona Kolam, and Aslanas Tarasa. What does it mean? They were great philosophers too. But it means that there's a certain knowledge that's attainable only through Nevuah, not attainable through human reasoning. And that has to do with this area. What area is this? The area is the relationship between God and man. That's something that no philosopher could ever know. A philosopher can tell you how to live. And a good philosopher, could be machaven to the same ideas in the Derech HaChayim in Yadis. That's possible. It's possible. Avraham Avinu is the best philosopher. Okay? Best philosopher. So Avraham Avinu was able to do it. But there's one thing that even Avraham Avinu can't know without Nevuah, and that is the relationship that exists between God and man. As a matter of fact, as we've said many times, a philosopher will always come to the conclusion, if he's honest, that man is not worthy of God having a relationship with him. That's the true way. That's the true. That's the sign of a true philosopher. If that's where his philosophy leads him, Mo'enosh Kisiskereta. That's where it should lead him. It just doesn't make any sense. But Nevuah comes in and tells us no, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a special relationship with a person, with Klal Yisrael, especially with Klal Yisrael, a very special relationship. And this is something which has to be the source of great joy to a person when he makes that discovery, that this is so. And if it's not the source of great joy, then he's lacking in his relationship to God. Is it? Why is this simcha different than every other simcha? Because every other simcha is a mundane simcha, and there's no benefit in the person reflecting on his state, really. But insofar as his reflection upon his state, insofar as he relates to God, that's a different kind of reflection. Okay? That is a reflection upon, then when a person reflects upon the state, it's a metaphysical reflection. It's a reflection which leads him to happiness, that God has this relationship with him, and it is a reflection which leads him by its nature and its definition to perfection. And the proof is the way of the Rambam's case. Can a person, what does Rambam say? The Rambam says, there's one type of simcha and yantif. He has two types of simcha. One is halulus, that's no good, cancels it out. And the other kind is where a person is no old dalsos besa, and he doesn't allow the unfortunate in. So you can see very well, can a person be reflecting upon his well-being, his state? What kind of a state is he? But not a state personally. His state insofar as he relates to God. That's, after all, the most important aspect of his state. Can a person reflect upon that state and say he's overjoyed that he has this relationship with God, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Borei Olam, relates to him in some way? Shouldn't relate to him at all, actually, according to human reason, but we're fortunate we have Nevuah. V'chalt Hashem l'fnei Hashem l'kecha. The Migdash is the symbol of the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu relates to us. V'asul v'migdash v'shachanti b'zohan. Right? A person reflects upon that idea, it should give him great joy. Can a person reflect on that idea simultaneously and close the door to the Amonos and the Yisomim and other unfortunate people? It's impossible. You can see why it's impossible. It can't be. It's just totally impossible. It's a tie to the Sasri. It's a tie to the Sasri. It's a tie to the Sasri. So you see, therefore, that this kind of happiness is not an optional psychological phenomenon, but on the contrary, it is a kiyama mitzvah. A kiyama mitzvah of the highest degree. It's an amazing thing. It's possible only because Nevuah can tell us how God relates to man. Nevuah can tell us how God relates to man. And beyond that, Without Nevuah, you'd never know it. No philosopher could ever know such a thing. And that's why no philosopher would ever give such a prescription. To be Ochel v'shoseh. What is Ochel v'shoseh? A philosopher would say this man's a heathen. He's Ochel v'shoseh. And Yadis, on the contrary. If he's Ochel v'shoseh, and it puts him in a frame of mind, and he reflects upon the fact that God relates to him, and that he's so fortunate because the creator of the universe relates to him, then this is metaphysical happiness. It is perfection. It is something which draws him closer and closer to the Borei Olam. And if he doesn't have that kind of a reflection, he's missing essentially. It means you went through the mitzvahs. Even if you would have done the mitzvahs, not a critique on the mitzvahs. But what didn't you do? You didn't reflect on your relationship to the Borei Olam. So the mitzvahs are the mitzvahs have no flavor, they have no tam. I mean, it's just a perfunctory activity. There's no essence to it. The essence is the relationship to God. That's the simcha. And that's why you can understand why shikrus is no good. Shikrus is a different thing. Shikrus is a person who's enjoying his own emotions. That's nothing to do with this. It's a different kind of experience. Okay. The Torah knows man is a man. Man has a psyche. Man has a body, and the Torah never denied it. What does the Rambam say? That some people who think they're very religious, they try to destroy the guf. Kilo Hakadosh Baruch Hu Soni as a guf. If God hates the body, he created the body. Doesn't make any sense. A person has a guf and a person has a psyche, and a person has to work within that framework. But the objective is a person is an ochel v'shosa, and he drinks yayin. That's what Gemara says, that a person that drinks the right amount of yayin, it's tirosh or tirosh. Tirosh. Tirosh means drinks the proper amount, so then it improves the person's rosh. It improves it. That's what I told you. This society doesn't want to recognize such a thing because it's raised in a neurotic society. We live in a neurotic society. That's why Freud was good, and has a good business. Yes? The Rambam was the greatest philosopher. And the Rambam held all the principles of the philosophers insofar as perfection is concerned, human perfection, as far as the guf. And he followed that. He followed very closely the lines of Aristotle. And not that he was no follower of Aristotle, he understood what he meant. He understood the ideas. But but over here, Simchas Yontif, was no contradiction. Now, why is it? Now, how is it? Oh, Yoshe Vashona. Somebody asked me before. So it's either Ochel Vashosa or Yoshe Vashona. Depends if the person's an Am Haaretz. He's unfortunately an ignoramus. Ochel Vashosa. The Talmud Chacham is Yoshe Vashona. So what is the? Even the Talmud Chacham could be Ochel Vashosa. So I'm just saying that's probably the way we go. So how is Yoshe Vashona? Yoshe Vashona. Because in Yoshe Vishona, there always is simcha. Yoshe Vishona is always simcha. A person that learns properly is always reflecting. The moment he has an idea, he reflects upon, when he enjoys the idea, it has to be reflection upon there's a simcha, it's a different, it's a certain simcha, not so much, I shouldn't use reflection over here. Reflection is really Ochel Vishosa. But in learning, learning also produces that state of simcha. That state of simcha. Right. So it makes a person, it puts him in that state where he enjoys his relationship, his realization of his relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the Rambam, Avos Hashem. Rambam, Avos Hashem. As Rambam says, the shows of a person is bonain, he's miyadi, he's filled with an ava, she'ifo, l'makom. So that's the same thing. So that's why it's either Ochel Vashosa or Yoshe Vashona. Either way. Now, it's interesting, yes? You see, what do you see by Yitzchak? By Yitzchak Avinu? Then what did he say? He wanted to give the brachos, and he wanted Nevuah to be Shora, because the brachos were given with Ruach HaKodesh. And what did he tell his son Esav? I mean, he thought it was Esav. He told him, Avil Yitzayed. So that's Avil Yitzayed. So he wanted the food. So you see, that was necessary. That's what he means. The Rambam says, he's right. That's right. The Rambam says, Doma L'Shchina. That's right. The Rambam says in the end of Hilchos Megillah. Very basic. What's reading now, was it? Shein Shom. Shein Shom. That's it. Shein Shom. There isn't. Domo L'Shechina. That's right. It means his Domo L'Shechina means he's Medabek B'Shechina. If he has Shalot and Medabek B'Shechina, yeah, if he does Velachta B'Drocha. Okay. So that's the, you're right, that's the Rambam in the end of Hilchos Megillah. Same thing, same idea. This concept of Simcha is really not limited to Yom Tov. It's not limited to Yom Tov. As a matter of fact, I would say the objective of Yadus is to convert every personal Simcha into this kind of Simcha. You say, the general objective of Yadus is to convert, I would say the general objective of Yadus is to convert every personal Simcha into this kind of Simcha. And if it doesn't reach this kind of Simcha, really, then the philosophy of Yadus has failed. You say, here's a simple thing. Like, for instance, the bracha when a person hears good news. So what is he supposed to do? He's supposed to make a Shechiyano, Tavametiv, right? Why? Why does he have to do that? Because the answer is, because the moment the person makes a Shechiyano, a Tov HaMeitiv, he immediately converts an unimportant momentary personal joy to a joy that partakes of the eternal. That's the joy of the fact that he relates to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He says, Baruch Tov HaShem, L'kein HaMalach HaOlam, Shechiyano, Yimono, Yimono, Zman HaZeh. He immediately converts the personal into that kind of a simcha. Different kind of thing. The personal is a momentary. Man gets excited, but man is very foolish. He gets excited, and 5 minutes later, he's upset. So this type of thing is very temporary. But the Shechiyono, that's something that's permanent. Yadus tries to convert the momentary, frivolous pleasures to something more real and more permanent. And that is man's relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the objective of Yadus. Where do you see that? Most of all, there's one halacha that shows it more than anything else. And that is the halacha with regard to breaking the glass by a chasna. Emesh kachach mishalayim, tish kachimini, tibat lashon elochiki, imlo ezkerechi, Im lo ala es Yerushalayim, al rest of chasid. So what does it mean? It means to say that in back of every simcha, rosh of chasid, means is always Yerushalayim. What is Yerushalayim? Yerushalayim is the city whose existence testifies to the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a relationship with Klal Yisrael. And that's why the Gemara says that the moment the Churban HaBayis took place, so now there's no more, now there can't be any simcha on a person's life. There are Shittas and Rishonim and Rav Moshe Paskus that way. You could never listen to music at all. Yeah, well, that thing makes you as serious as how is it possible? Rav Moshe holds you can't listen at all anytime. But other posts can say, I mean, certainly you're not allowed to make a party and have an optional party unless it's a chasna. Just to have music and CSI and certainly be us. I mean, can't do that. Because why? Why? Because once Yerushalayim was destroyed, that kiyum of simcha, of lefnei Hashem, was compromised. And since the lefnei Hashem doesn't exist anymore, so then a person can't indulge in his own simcha. Why? Because then the simcha is a personal. It's a personal simcha. Purely personal simcha. Purely personal simcha, the Yadus held, is not even optional, but is dangerous. Dangerous. The only real simcha is a simcha which eventuates, reflects upon the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the person. So that's why at every chasana you break a glass to demonstrate that the only simcha is the simcha that has a king. Which simcha is that? That's the simcha of Nei Hashem. That's the only simcha that there is. The simcha that has a king. And since that simcha today is not possible, Bishleimusa is not possible completely, then the personal simcha, what you're demonstrating is that this, the real institution of simcha is not possible anymore. That's what you're demonstrating. So how can you do such a thing at a chasna? Person at the time of their life was the greatest, say it's the time of the greatest happiness, the person should be the time of his greatest happiness, and yet it seems that Yadis cruelly introduces something breaking a dish which is supposed to be, today it's completely misunderstood. Everybody breaks it and says, Mazel Tov, Mazel Tov. Nonsense. It's all nonsense. Not the, not that they didn't see it in houses when something breaks, they say Mazel Tov. So if that's the case, you can't break a dish anymore because it's supposed to be something said. So this is Mazel Tov, and it's not said anymore. So you have to introduce, you have to change the custom, introduce a new custom then. But the mistake is anyways that you shouldn't say Mazel Tov after they break the glass. You should wait. You should wait. And then say Mazel Tov. The moment they break the glass, everybody says Mazel Tov. That's not Mazel Tov. That's Chorban HaBayis. That's Chorban HaBayis. Actually, but people, the reason is because people don't understand the ideas, and it's very difficult. Really the halacha is very difficult. Halacha says a person, time of the chasna, is supposed to be, people look at the happiest moment of their life. I mean, and you tell them to break a dish, to destroy something which should lead to sadness. How could Yadis do that to a person? But the reason is because of the philosophy that there's only one real simcha, and the only real simcha is Atnei Hashem. And any time a person is sameach, it's supposed to reflect. He's supposed to reflect upon the real simcha. When he reflects upon the real simcha, he sees it's lacking because of the Chorban HaBayis. So it's sad. It's sad. That's the reality. That's the reality. And that's the minhag of that's the minhag of course. Not a minhag, it's a Gemara, really. Gemara says. So it's a minhag. It's a minhag from the Gemara. I mean. So therefore, you see that this idea of simcha penetrates not just the Aloch and Yontif. Really, it's Aloch and a person, the whole Derech HaChaim of a person. That's right. The Amendi's right. The Aloch states the converse too. A person, Rahman al-Salam, something bad happens, so then the Aloch is that he has to say the Dayan HaEmes, the Simcha Gedola. It means to recognize that his relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't change. And it's not based upon the fact that whether God gave him what he thinks is good for him or not, no matter how convinced he is that it's so. That's why he has to make the bracha of Dayan HaEmes. Dayan HaEmes is really a bracha you make on bad news. We really don't do it anymore today. I mean, people only make the bracha if there's Rachman Slan have a velos. But really the real halacha, I mean, the dina is really a person, any sad news, a person is supposed to make a bracha of Dayan HaEmes. So it says Kishim Shemavorchin Alatov Kach Mavorchin Alara, and the Rambam emphasizes even more. He emphasizes that it must be with the same simcha over Tuv Levav. Why? Because it's not there. You're talking about the permanent relationship with Kadosh Baruch Hu, and this is something which is which there can't be, no matter whether he got what he thinks he wants or not. It makes no difference. But the reflection upon that state, that's the biggest proof that the purpose of the brachas is really always to take the person from the nonsensical, so to speak, you know, emotional, to the real, to the relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's why the bracha really is the state. The state is a state, his relationship to God. So it's impossible his relationship to God should be any different, whether he's happy, whether he's unhappy. It doesn't make any difference. Once he reflects on that thing, it must be the simcha. That's why it has to be. It has to be kashem. Because that's the something that's permanent, that doesn't change. That doesn't change. That stays the same. Well, you should say the simcha. I mean the bracha. Yeah. Pergit Allah again. Tashim, what is it? Tashim, very strong language.
שנאמר ואף השם הולכת כל 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 מה שלא עומדך ובכלל אב היסרה שנתקבינו בה שאפילו באיס שייצר לו יודה וישבח בשמחה.
The significance is, the significance of his choice is like this. If he chooses Eichel V'Shesa, he's not going to become a big alum. The halacha is that the Simchas Yontov is, there's a certain Kedushas Ayom. You have to understand this. You have to be sensitive to this idea. It's a halachic idea. But if you know what I mean? In halacha, things have to be a certain way. You have to develop that sensitivity. Halacha can't be arbitrary. So there's a, because Don is asking, why can't you just jump up and back? So that's because of the fact that the day of Yontif has to have a certain character. That's the way halacha is made. It has to have a certain character to it. Can't just be, you know what I mean, it has no tzura. So the tzura has to be either Ochel V'Shosa, that's one tana, or Yoshe V'Shona. The Kedusha Sayom has to come about through a uniform kind of tzura. Can't help it, that's halacha. But we paskin chalkul. Chalkul means that there's the day up till 12 o'clock, there's the day after 12 o'clock. That's how we possibly. So the character of the day is a dual character, but it shouldn't just be an hour. It should be up till 12, because that's the way halacha works. Halacha demands a certain aesthetics in halacha. It's not aesthetically appealing to have, there's no character to the day. You understand what I mean? That halacha demands a certain tzura. Okay? So the tzura is half and half. That's the tzura. You can't just go up and back. Because go up and back, it's not halachically. There's no aesthetic appeal to such a thing. That's the way halacha works. You have to understand halacha. You know, that's the way halacha is. Yeah. I mean, that's what the Chorban HaBayis is. What the bias is. The Gemara says you can't laugh. The Gemara says, Ozimole Skarpino. Ozimole Skarpino. The Gemara says one Amar was Rabbi Yechonon was laughing, and he said no. He said I'm putting on tefillin. I'm wearing tefillin. That's what the Rambam says. Even though all the Ma'adim have Simcha, but Sukkos and his Yontif is the time of Lefnei, and it's a concentrated effort on that experience. That's what it is. That's what it is. That's the essence of it. It's always a mitzvah. Tachas Levanto Hashem Kachav Simcha Tov Leivav. Is the Shem Simcha constant? But that's the time that's developed. Just like it's no different than Aser Shmei Tshuva. I mean, the Tshuva is always a mitzvah. But you see the terrorists. But that's the reason why Yadis does that, is because, like the Rambam says in the Morning Ruchim, the Rambam says that things become, every day become mundane. So that's why you have to set aside a special time. It revives the whole institution. Okay. First thing was Simchas Yontov.
Let me just say, from what I remember, one time I went through the area. The question is, what is the idea of Tainus Chalom? We only have two types of dreams in Yadis. You have a dream, and it's interesting, I mean, it's interesting to know, you should know how Yadis views, like, certain psychological phenomena, you know, that certain psychoanalytic phenomena. Because even though in Yadis, I don't believe that Chazal spent their time analyzing neurotics. I don't think they did that. And I would say, insofar as the analysis and treatment of neurotics, I would say Sigmund Freud was a better physician. But Chazal knew the basic concepts that have to do with the human mind. There's no such thing that they didn't know. You know, they weren't aware of the basic ideas of the unconscious mind, and not in a clinical sense, but in terms of a normal sense. Normal. Right. The normal manifestations of the primitive side of man, you see, that they would know. But the treatment of neurotics is a little more complicated than that. They really didn't go into that type of thing. I don't doubt that they would be interested in it if they were, you know, if they were just in time. But I also know that the basic premise, I don't think anything would be very surprising to them. You know what I mean? Because basically, a lot of the discoveries of psychoanalysis was made, they were big solution because of the fact that people believed the Christianized society, which Yadis doesn't have, because the Gemara is very frank about all the areas of sex and all these different areas. The Gemara is very open, you know, they didn't have these type of repressions. But insofar as, like for instance, a slip of the tongue. Somebody wrote a comment on it, I think they're right. They mentioned that you can't say that, they tell it like this, they said, how could you say that you could tell a person's intention by a slip of the tongue? If that were the case, so then why does Chazal know that? You know, you should tell a person's intention by a slip of the tongue. I think the answer is like this. Personally, I think the answer is. The answer is that a slip of the tongue only shows you what one part of the person wants, his unconscious desire, let's say. Okay? So a person makes a slip, so it reveals a part of his nature that he's suppressing. But that doesn't mean that that's the essence of it, that's the essence of his nature. So for most people, it might be. Of course, all they do, they just follow their emotions. If that's all a person does, is he follows emotions, that's his essence. So it's either one type of emotional expression or another kind. So then a slip is very revealing. But a Talmud Chacham really is a person who uses his mind. I mean, he doesn't, his mind is set off as a separate instrument with which he investigates his personality. And he may have an emotional pulls, but what he does is he analyzes them. He has an emotional pull in this direction, an emotional pull in that direction, but he has a whole philosophical system which he uses to make his decisions. So that's why I would say that a slip of the tongue in an ordinary person might very well reveal what the person really intends to do, but in Talmud Chacham it does not reveal it. See, all it shows you is that there is an element in him that has, provided it's interpreted properly, by the way. I mean, you know, people are very quick to interpret everybody else's slips. Usually it's their own interpretation. I mean, their own interpreting
More about themselves.
It reveals more about themselves than the one that they're analyzing. But yes. Oh, okay. Yeah. What do I do with it?
Yeah.
So I was saying that the nagea to a slip of the tongue, even if it should be properly analyzed, it wouldn't. If the villain going to make a slip of the tongue, that wouldn't demonstrate what he really wants. I mean, you can't say it's impossible for anybody to make a slip of the tongue. It's only a human being; he has emotions. But the thing is that the slip of the tongue only reveals a suppressed part of the person's nature. But whether that suppressed part of the person's nature is really the ruling force in his nature. That depends. Talmud Chacham's ruling force is his intellect, not his emotions. So he has two. Why two? Because doesn't say v'chol libcha, v'chol levavcha. Why? Because v'chol levavcha is yetzer tov, yetzer ra. It means they're both different sides of your nature. So a Talmud Chacham serves God with both sides. It means that there is. He has a reality principle. He perceives what reality is, and because he knows reality is not what his emotions portray, so therefore he doesn't trust his emotions. So he has emotions. He takes the messages from his emotions, but then he consults the world of reality, the world of Chachma. That's the difference in Talmud Chachma and a regular person. It's a whole different frame and mindset. A regular person just thinks because he feels this way. This is what's right. I mean, you see people arguing politics in the street. That they feel, he's rather good, because he feels that way. No, there's no rationale. They don't let us say, look, my emotions feel this way, let me check it out rationally. They'd have nothing to say if they did that, because they have no rational train of thought. You know what I mean? No, I'm serious. But the point is, a Talmud Chacham is a different kind of a person. It's a person that operates on a different level. He has a reality principle. So a Talmud Chacham, you can't know what a Talmud Chacham really thinks by a slip, because you can only say that it's a component of his nature. But that's not the ruling part of his soul. That's not the ruling part of the soul. So that's why I say, because I saw it, you know, there's a fellow in Israel, Fogelman, Yaakov Fogelman. Some of the guys, you may have seen some of this stuff around, right? Yeah. I want to know where you get this stuff. He's not big. Yeah? He's an old, very old chaver of mine. And We learned together Chatz Chaim many, many years ago. And he has a very good mind. He has a good mind. And he's a funny guy, right? He has interesting stuff. But he mentioned that one of his things. I saw that. He mentioned it. He asked it in but he mentioned about the... He mentioned one of his things about the fact that that you can't introduce new kinds of things, like saying that you know what a person really means by interpreting his lip. You know, because he says it's not found in the Chazal. And he's right, I thought about it. He's right, absolutely right. Doesn't mean there's no things still in time, but it means that you can't base your knowledge of his intention on that. Whereas with a normal person, average person, you would be able to do it. But yes, say to maintain that there's a method of knowing what a person really is, whether it's a tzaddik or whether it's a rasha, by interpreting a slip, that can't be. It can't be because you can't know the person. There's no method. Chazal don't give us any method of knowing a person. So if there was such a method, then we'd have a masorah now from Sinai. That has to do with philosophy. And Sinai was given philosophy and psychology so far as necessary for perfection is concerned. If that were true, then we would have something like that. But it's not true. And yes, because I'll do recognize psychological methods of no. That's different. See, over there, like Kiso Kaisokoso, you're dealing with the person in function as he's functioning. A slip, you're not. A slip, you're just revealing a component of his personality, but you're not really dealing with him in the full, in the final form. Whereas those are different. So getting back to a chalom, there are two kinds of dreams that we have in Yadas. One dream is the dream that, like you have the dream of Paro, which is a prophetic dream. And the other kind of dream is a dream that Kehalas mentions. The dream Rayonos, that Shlomo Melech mentions. Not Kehalas, it's a Mishnah. Rayonos, Libcho, al Mishkevecho, Olam. That is another possibility that says it. That a person, Chazal mentioned it too, that what a person thinks about in the daytime, he dreams about. You know, it means to say the dream is an expression of his preoccupations, his mental preoccupations. That's what a dream is, you see. That's a psychoanalytic dream. But we also believe that there's a prophetic dream. Now, a tainus chalom is not necessarily because a person thinks it's a prophetic dream. Because how would he know that? Just because he's troubled by the dream wouldn't mean that it's prophetic. But the way Chazal handled the dream that upsets a person, they handled it in an interesting way. I mean, like I said, Chazal didn't employ a system of psychoanalysis, but it could take you 5 years, and then you might not even get down to it. So a person is in need. He's in a troubled state. It's a troubled state. So Yadus has to deal with it on a conscious plane rather than on, you know, through an unconscious mode. So what Chazal say first of all is that that a person should have somebody interpret it for good. Because people have fear, and not everybody's on a totally rational plane. And people are afraid of dreams, because dreams really are unconscious feelings. So it brings a person to fear. So that's why they said that people should interpret it for the good. So that it's a good thing. So therefore it loses the immediate hold on such a type of a person. But also Chazal said you should fast. Why? Because what it means is like this. Fasting really is tshuva. So it means that if the person... When a person has an attack of guilt, it usually comes from that's why he's afraid, some kind of a guilt attack. So Chazal always, the Shita of the Torah is always to utilize the emotion. Any emotion a person has, she utilizes it for perfection. So therefore, what he does is, he takes that emotion, is an emotion of guilt, really, it's an emotion of plain guilt, and he channels it towards a higher sphere. He channels it towards a sphere. He uses that emotion to cause him to reflect upon his life, and to rationally do tshuva. Tainus is tshuva. So the Torah always does it. That's the style of Torah all the time. The Torah always takes an emotion and tries to channel it to a higher plane. Okay? A higher plane. So a person has an emotion of guilt, so it could remain just to be pure psychological guilt, which doesn't really improve a person in any way. But you can take that opportunity to use that emotion for a higher level, for really introspection and for self-perfection. So that's why that's the halacha of Tainus Cholom, really. It's a chiyuv. Chazal also seems to indicate, the Gemara says that the Tainus really is mevatel l'chalom. And that, I think, can be explained. What does it mean? The chalom doesn't have any power. But that, I think, can be explained psychologically. That a chalom, and a person that has a certain emotional fears, for instance, the Rambam mentions, the Rambam says, as a lacha, that a woman, that two of her husbands died, so most people say three, but the truth of the matter is it's supposed to be two, but anyway. So then you shouldn't marry her. So why? Isha katlanis. Okay, she's a killer woman. So so somebody asked the Rambam about this. You know, what is that? So the Rambam says, as you take a look, you'll see that there's never stopped anybody from marrying a woman. But why do they say you shouldn't do it? He said because the guy is going to think that way. The people think that way. So what Chazal? So no, yes. So if it bothers him, it can kill him, because a person can die of a psychological fear. I want to say the pasuk. It's an interesting pasuk. Pasuk says, "Yomam Hashemesh lo yakeka, v'yareach b'loila." Pasuk say it all the time, right? Yomam Hashemesh lo yakeka, v'yareach b'loila. So, what does it mean? Yomam Hashemesh lo yakeka. I understand. The sun can be very strong, and it could cause a person to die in the desert, dehydrated, right? But what does it mean? Yareach b'loila, the moon. How can the moon kill you? The moon doesn't have any effect on the person. It's a body in space like any other, made up of matter. I mean, there's nothing special about it. So what is it? We believe that there's something special about the moon. There's nothing special about the special properties, forces. We don't believe in that. So what's the pshat? V'yareach b'loila. What it means is, my opinion of pshat is, it means because people ascribe powers to the moon. So even the word lunacy comes from, lunatic comes from luna. So it's a natural thing. People at nighttime, nighttime's an eerie time, and the moon, they project like weird, it's really from their own unconscious, but they project weird types of powers to the moon. So it means like this, Yomam Hashemesh lo yakechav v'reach b'lelo, means that if you follow the way of the Torah, so then you'll be totally rational, you'll live a life of chachma, and you won't have to worry about the physical forces damaging you, because you live in the proper way, and you live according to Chachma, and because of the Avashgach Hashem, and you also don't have to worry about the mystical forces. That's right. But a regular person is plagued by mystical forces also. I mean, you see, a Reagan was afraid, was superstitious. That's Yareach B'loila. That's Yareach B'loila. Yeah. And a person can make some bad judgments based on these things. He can jeopardize his life even. I mean, it's crazy. A person can be in need of an operation or something, or based on some kind of crazy thing, and he'll die. And also, the fact is that a person who believes in a lot of these things, it can affect them. The belief itself can have an effect on them. People die, and the primitive people die because of voodoo. There's nothing wrong with them, they just die. Because they actually believe that a spell has been cast, and they're going to die. They actually die because of that.
That if you get a bad interpretation, the person can die from
that
interpretation.
That's what it means. It means because people are primitive. Well, today less than years ago because of modern science, but years ago is more. But the ignoramus years ago was worse. So the thing is that people believe in these things, but even today people believe in it.
People
believe in it. Just by thinking that. Yeah, it's actually the psyche can really affect the body. That's psychosomatic, psyche and soma. So psyche can affect the soma, affect the body. Actually, shut off everything, just die. Fear, kill a person. So the truth of the matter is, Chazal dealt very wisely with the whole idea of a chalom. A person's in the grips of fear from a chalom. First of all, they said you should interpret to the person for good. You know? That is That's number one. So a person takes three chaverim, and a person has confidence in his friends, you know, so that relieves a lot of the anxiety. But the best thing is a tainus chalom, because then what he does, and the Gemara says that it actually, it's like, it's yafa tainus lachalom ki eish l'naoros. Like a fire burns up a thin filament of fiber, like that. That's the way it gets rid of it. Why does it get rid of it? Because what it does is, it takes the person out of a sense of guilt which is attached to nothing, you know, and it directs it towards tshuva, so towards a higher sphere, so that emotion of guilt is satisfied, but it's satisfied in a rational way. So it actually what it does is, it neutralizes the whole effect, because it takes it from the primitive sphere into the higher sphere, the intellectual sphere. It applies it, so it raises them to a higher level, and it has an outlet, and it makes them a higher person. That's why Chazal say a person should fast. Okay. So the Mishnah says on the chalomos, it's in Reish Pei Ches. He says the various chalomos that they say you have to should fast on. He says, the Pasha de Gamba said, the Dafka Nafsho Agumalav. It's only if he really bothers him very much. It doesn't bother him a bit. That's the case. Alright. You can't, like, look down upon the halacha, because the thing is that we're really more primitive than we imagine. That's a lot of unconscious forces that we're not aware of. You see one thing. You see the criterion is only if it's nafsha gumala, which shows you the person. If it really bothers the person, so that's the type. You see the kind of person. It's.
But do you say that it shows?
I don't mean it necessarily. You can assess the person's perfection from that. I don't mean it in that sense. When you see that he's prone to this kind of thing, and then look, you know, the Rav one time mentioned Chaim. He mentioned about his grandfather, Chaim Brisker. Chaim Brisker is. Super intellect, but he said he had a very strong fear of death, and then when he got older, he started bothering. So what he used to do was he'd learn aholos. He'd learn all about all the halachas have to do with mason. Yeah, so he'd learn all the concepts in halachas. So he made it into halachic reality then. So he lost the fear. Interesting thing. Anyways. How do you understand the fool like with Moshe Rabbeinu? Okay, see, Moshe Rabbeinu argued with God for 7 days. What kind of thing is that?
The wrong person.
I'm just saying, what does it mean? Avraham Avinu argued with God, but Moshe Rabbeinu is even more. I mean, remember, you say he's trying to know what the justice is. He's right. Trying to learn from God what justice is. Okay, so he had a dialogue with God. But even though it doesn't fully answer, because he seems to be arguing with God from there. It seems like he's arguing, he's not just asking. You know what I mean? He's a chalila l'cha. He argues, you know what I mean? How could you do this? You can't do this. A shofei kalaretz l'yasa mishpat. He argues with God. And Moshe Rabbeinu argues with God. More. Lama ha'ra'asa lama zeh, lama zeh shachtani. He argues. How could it be? I mean, these are the greatest people. So it's an amazing thing, the whole thing. Moshe Rabbeinu, when you read it, doesn't make any sense to you. You think that if God would tell any one of us to do something, would you argue? I mean, you'd just get going right away. Not sooner. Right? So, what's the pshat? And I believe it's unique in Yadis. Unique in Yadis. No other nation that depicts their holy men would ever make such a depiction. See, arguing with God. I mean, on the contrary, the holy man is the one that is totally identified with God, so to speak, and follows exactly what God says. And you see, you know, Torah is different. It's totally different right there. What kind of concept is it? I don't understand. So, what's the shot? The mistake is like this. You see, I'm going to speak about it again, but all right. The mistake is that. That we don't understand the Yisod in Yadis. Yisod in Yadis is that God never interferes with a person's Bechira. You see, by Paro Mitzrayim, and the Mefarshim of bother with. How could God take away his Bechira? That's the thing. One person, God could take one person, the man's a Russia, so God takes the Bechira away. So what? So what's so terrible about that? No, he didn't take his Bechira. Rashi says first five times he did it himself, and the Rambam says, and that's why it was Chayav. Ramban, he didn't deserve to have any Bechira anymore. That's the very onus. All these things. What's the big deal? One little paro. What? Yeah. Yeah, it just was the overcoming the power. Fear.
Gave him more
pressure,
more ability.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, it says it also, the old Rav Yeshua Bessas says it. Exact same thing. I guess it's Chavim this morning, yeah. It's a nice job. But the, it makes sense, too. But anyways, the, yeah. But what's the idea? What's the idea? What's the answer? The answer is that we have a primitive notion of Nevuah. Primitive idea of Nevuah. Our idea of Nevuah is completely wrong. It's false. That's why we have this kasha. There is never a situation where God stops a person from functioning as a human being. Never. Never intervenes with a person so that he doesn't function as a human being. So even Moshe Rabbeinu, even in the presence of God, still functions like a human being. See? And therefore, if he doesn't understand something, it's just that he has a different front of operation than we have. We don't have that front of operation. We're not on a level where we communicate with God. See? So we don't have that front. Fellow. But Moshe Rabbeinu in that sphere of operation functions like a human being. He analyzes. He can only go in the shlichus if it makes sense to him. It's a rational thing. He doesn't cease to be to function as a human being. That would be, then Nevuah would be a terrible thing. It would be a terrible thing. Nevuah is just another situation. You have to be roy for that situation. You have to be worthy of that situation. But when you're in that situation, you function like a human being. So that's what he held, that was the rational thing, and that's how he functioned like a rational person. You understand what I mean? It's a primitive idea of Nevuah that we have that is the source for that question. Yadus is unique, because Yadus shows a person that's a different, tries to point that to the person, you know, through the stories, you know, that you shouldn't be aware of this. Different kind of phenomenon than you imagine. Because if it was what you imagined, you would never do anything like that. You'd never argue with God. So,
but what about from a rational
point? And yet he differentiates between the Egyptians and the Jews. Right. That's right. The Gemara is more from a sign on day. It has to do with the idea of magic. I think it's an important concept because the Gemara says. Yeah. So later. The Gemara says that Rabbi Hanina so the Gemara says Enod Mufada. Amar Rabbi Hanina. Bahiluk Shah. Rabbi Hanina says when it says Enod Mufada, there's nobody else besides God. Even magic. Okay. Now he it's a Davis Kamaha just when Meshkalach and Tupi carried Rabbi Hanina. So there was this witch that tried to she wanted to kill him, Rabbi Hanina. So she tried to take earth from under his feet. Which, you know, like I guess indicates he's going to die. So he said, Amalo, he said to Ashkuli, take it. Lo mistayim osa, it's not going to help you. Ain't od mufadam, say. Nobody else besides God. Okay. Fine. All right? So that's in line with, as a matter of fact, I think one time gave a son of shot and ain't od mufadam. What does ain't od mufadam mean? Ain't od mufadam means, what it means is nobody else besides God. Right? Who else could there be, and how could you show me that there's nobody else besides God? If you have such a avami. What it means like this, Eino Mavado means that a person is drawn to Avodah Zarah because he has emotions, and Avodah Zarah projects certain things onto reality, certain forces onto reality. Eino Mavado means that we recognize there are no other forces. Those things are nonsensical. And the only thing, the only one we believe in is the God of the universe. And we can only perceive him insofar as we can through our Chachmah. And any emotional kind of fears or things, different kind of crazy things, we deny. Ain't no one, there's nobody else besides. That's what it means, Ain't no one father. Ain't no one father means those other crazy emotions don't exist. Non existent. You say it in, you say it in Olam HaShaveach. Right. Okay. As of Shabbat Olam, right. That's all he is. So the Gemara says, Bachiluk Shachan, even magic. But now the Gemara says, then it's a strange Gemara. The Gemara says, Lom Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan says, Lom Nikosh Mon Shachan, why they call this, why it's called Kishuf, Shema Kishin Pamal Yishol Milo. Because they can actually contradict
So they have an illusion, which means they can go against the legions of God. You think? And Rashi says that he says, "Makrich pamasha malach shelo gozro adam zelomus v'humeis haivek shofar." Because according to the pamasha malach, he shouldn't die, but according to the kishif, he'll die, so they can really kill you, right? So the Gemara says, "Shiny Rabbi Chanina or the nefishas of Chuzer." Rabbi Chanina is different because he has a lot of he had a lot of spice. So the implication is, the flame shot in the Gemara is, they get you, that's right. If somebody will come over to you and take the dirt from under your feet, you're really in trouble. Right? So I think about the Gemara. The Gemara shot like this. That the David also showed me this Gemara yesterday. The shot is like this. The shot is, on the contrary, the Gemara, you know, the Ram says it's the word. The Gemara is written after, he says, the word the Ram, you have to know how to unravel the ideas of the Chazal. Take the Chazal literally, you're not going to understand what they mean. But it means like this. You'll notice the Gemara said, "Shot, ain't no Nevada." That's a shot in the Pasuk. That's what it shot. Now the Gemara says, "How can it work for him?" I mean, because he was a governor, because he had a lot of stuff. But that's not what he said. He said, "Ain't no Nevada." He said, "The Pasuk tells me that." That's what it shot. So how could the Gemara retract? The Gemara's not going to answer anything. Gemara says, it's called, it's not Makkish Kamali Shomaila. Right? Yeah, so the Gemara says, "Shiny Rabbi Chanin is Fisher School System." The Chanin is different because he has a lot of schools. So, but it's not new, the fact that he has a lot of schools. But he quoted a Pasuk, he knows Mufada. What do you do with the Pasuk? His chat was wrong in the Pasuk? He just happened to be saved because he has a lot of schools, but his chat was wrong? Gemara doesn't say that. The Gemara should say, "Vah, Krah, Tadarish." Right? So you see right away that when you look into this Chazal, it's something problematic over there. That's what I want to say, Shavu again. What the Gemara means over here is, the Gemara is referring to the unconscious. What it means like this, that the truth of the matter is that everyone, most people, practically all people, and whether they realize it or not, are superstitious. And since magic, well, not sight, it's not acceptable anymore, but if a person, given a person's nature, that is he's unconscious and superstitious, and magic in the society is deemed as something that's effective, so a person can be affected by that to the point where it can actually kill them. So I see people die from the psychological stress of magic. This is a known fact. Now, what the Gemara is saying is like this. The Gemara is saying it's makhish kamal yashamala, means that a person's mind can distort his own fate against what should occur to him naturally. You see? That's why it's no kasha. Enod novado means in reality. Enod novado means there is no other force. Vahilucha. There's no force at all. There's no kind of force besides a baragol. But, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan says that it's called kishuf because it's makish from Malay Shemarla. The Gemara says, you're right. A person's unconscious can play a role and can actually have such a result, physical result, that it can really kill him, really destroy him. But not Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Chanina was on a high level. That's what I mean. Shiny Rabbi Chanina, not exclusive. But a regular person who's not on that level can fall prey to superstition to the point where it can really affect himself physically. It didn't have to occur. The naked cycle for some crazy reason. And people, you see how people even today, sophisticated people, believe in luck. Or even having a streak of bad, even people who don't believe in astrology, there's a streak of bad luck, I think. A streak of good luck, you know? And they see, people unconsciously are superstitious. I think, yes, it's lucky now, that's my lucky day today. A few things went well today, it's a lucky day. This is all these ideas. These ideas are very primitive ideas. These are primitive ideas. Exactly. And you see, people, they had a phrase in the Second World War, there are no atheists in a foxhole. What does it mean? It means the guy can be an atheist, but it comes down to it, his life's on the line, right away he just becomes a big believer. What does he believe in? What is there? Yeah, but the point is why? Because that shows you that deep down the person is unconscious. Even though he thinks he's a sophisticated person, he really is primitive. Right? Now the thing is, you need a certain situation to see him refer to as primitive. And most people will fall prey to that. But Shiny Rabbi Chanina is enough for stupid. So the Pasuk is right. Ain't no more problem. or no other person. But you have to be on a level. You have to be, and that's what it means. Afilu chukim means, it means to say that the kishur, that's what it means, ain't old mafada. It means a denial of, what the Gemara means by ain't old mafada, afilu chukim, it means not only is it a denial of other deities, ain't old mafada, but it has to, it's a denial of superstition. If you don't deny superstition, then you still aren't on the level of ain't old mafada. Afilu chukim. Because of all the others, of course, that's a gross projection. That definitely is if a person doesn't deny that, he definitely doesn't believe in the Eino Mavada. But even Kshafan means that in order for a person to really recognize God, he has to deny any kind of superstition. Chanina Kedoshah.